Part of what is so alarming about the consequences of climate change is that someday our vivid memories of an Earth that once was will be like little museums of imagination, places we can no longer go, no longer live, mountains no longer snow-capped, species extinct. A coalition of scientists, designers, and activists wants to prevent that. It all began when a New Yorker, Miranda Massey, realized after Hurricane Sandy in 2012 that she wanted a place to learn about climate change that was not a laboratory or some pop culture disaster movie. Her vision? A real museum all about climate in New York City for people with real questions to find real answers. Massey has teamed up with veteran climate scientist Cynthia Rosenzweig, a senior research scientist at NASA and Columbia University. Cynthia shares a piece of that 2007 Nobel Peace Prize with Al Gore for co-authoring the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report. The Climate Museum is due to open its doors in 2020. It will follow a museum now up and running in Hong Kong. The two museums will share the spotlight, and although they tell a sometimes grim story, director Miranda Massey says their very presence are a sign the planet, with humanity's help, is attempting to heal itself.
We're going to be all about success stories of the past, the present, and the future. And of course, we have to balance that with urgency. I think that will be the great challenge in the content of the museum. We have to inspire people with stories about solutions that are in progress and that have already worked and that will work, and the breakthroughs in technology that will move us and transition us into a clean energy economy. And of course, we also have to not candy coat the fact that this is an increasingly urgent set of concerns, and we have to act now and into the decades to come.
The museum will provide a space for discussions among the people of New York City, among the country, and among the world about what solutions are right for each context, so that it's not only just going to be exhibits on the walls, but the goal is to create a space for the kinds of societal discussions that are needed with the very firm base of science and technology forming the foundation.
How do you see a museum as the ideal model for this kind of engagement and outreach that I suspect is going to have to go on long before you open the doors if you get there in 2020?
Well, first of all, we're not going to do nothing until 2020 when the ribbon is cut. In fact, we're already starting a pop-up exhibit for probably a year from now, next fall. And we're going to be engaging in community discussions around the museum. So it's going to be a very living, engaging museum, not just a pile of bricks somewhere. But at the same time, having a location, a venue, a wonderfully designed building to act as a magnet for the kinds of information, presentations, discussions that need to happen as we develop the climate solutions is very much the idea of the museum.
And do you think that showcasing success of either mitigation or reversal is going to give that kind of excitement? Or is it design, people that have come up with ingenious solutions, that's going to give that kind of excitement? Or is it just alerting people, ringing alarm bells, that's going to give people that kind of excitement?
I think it's a combination of all of those. I work on climate impacts, and for 30 years, I published my first peer-reviewed journal article on climate change impacts in 1985. And because I work with so many groups, both here in New York, in the country, and around the world, there is so much going on. Every group is taking this on board, saying, what can we do, and how can we get started? And it's really to capture that tremendous amount of action that's really out there on the ground already.
The research is pretty clear that if we focus only on news that is dire, people turn away. And we can get people to engage if we balance success stories and urgency.
But visually, how are you going to grab people? I mean, for instance, the Discovery Channel, you know, talks a lot about the oceans, but their ratings come when they do Shark Week, right? So in many ways, you're going to have to think smartly about what's going to find the audience where they are. And if I'm a, 17-year-old kid going into the museum, in an ideal circumstance, what would you hope that I could see that would really be memorable?
I think it'll be different for different people. We want to provide a multitude of ways in. So for that 17-year-old, it might be, and I may be painting with too broad a brush here, but it might be a really captivating interactive exhibit that allows her or him to design an energy policy for the U.S. in 2050 based on the cutting-edge modeling that's being done at places like the Earth Institute up at Columbia, and providing a range of options and allowing her to look at what happens if you eliminate nuclear power from the mix, to use just one example, giving the 17-year-old a sense of agency and a sense of being engaged with a technology that she recognizes. That's one kind of exhibit we'll have. We can also imagine much more traditional museum exhibits telling the story of the science or the story of the scientists that have brought us to this point. That could be a much more historical narrative about discovery and the adventure of the first ice core samples being taken, for example. We can imagine art exhibits and debate events, debates, of course, within science and reasonable policy that would attract a different kind of audience. So there's a huge public out there that's ready to be engaged. And our goal is to empower people to become engaged and to have conversations with each other that they aren't having now.
Visually, how do you envision an exhibit that would cause someone, say a young family, to change their own behavior, give up certain things? What if I did this differently or did more of this?
First, we're working with the best designers in the New York area and the world to help us answer that question. As scientists, we're often accused of what you scientists can't communicate very well. So that's one of the reasons for my own engagement with the museum, because we have to build out from the base of the science and technology to actually do this kind of engagement. So this kind of interactive, what about having a playhouse in which that family can go inside a house and see and play with actually tactily what kind of heating system, what kind of climate resilience against flooding for the extreme precipitation events, which are already occurring, and how they can link to their neighborhoods. Because individuals are very important, but also building out to neighborhoods, communities, and seeing what can be done in the groups that we are all part of as well.
And that's a fundamental part of the theory for the museum, is a very clunky academic term that is, quote, collective efficacy, unquote. And that's really just the self-fulfilling prophecy that happens when you realize, hey, if I change out all my own light bulbs on an individual basis, that's not solving the crisis. But if I'm part of a group effort that extends far beyond my own household and even beyond my own immediate community, then we absolutely can solve this problem that seemed intractable 10 minutes ago.
Miranda Massey is director of the upcoming Climate Museum, and Cynthia Rosenzweig is a senior research scientist at NASA and Columbia University. And here's one last thing to take with you today. We've been warned, folks, about climate change, that is.
Today, natural beauty has new enemies, and we need new weapons to fight those enemies. They are the products of the modern world. In many ways, they are the dark side of the bright achievements which have helped us to grow.
President Johnson was a real softy for nature. In 1965, he spoke at a White House conference on natural beauty. We will be covering all of the natural and unnatural beauty at the upcoming Paris Summit 50 years after Lyndon Johnson gave that speech. Until then, thanks for listening. This is The Takeaway.
PRI, Public Radio International.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.